and welcome to We the People, your favorite weekly Nintendo podcast. My name is Michael Cottrell, and as always, I'm joined here by my twin brother, player two since the womb, Matthew Cottrell.
What up?
That's Matthew, and then we got a third seat
joining
us today.
Player three since 03.
Is that when we met?
04, but that's the closest.
Okay, close enough. Close enough.
Yeah. Not accurate, but it sounded cool, so we're going to roll with it.
Our boy Chubba, he's been our friend since 7th grade. Hey. And we've been gaming and stuff together. We're gamers. I guess you could call me a gamer. Yeah. And, you know, we've been playing games and stuff since 7th grade.
Yeah. Gamers unite!
There's one summer where we played Melee the entire summer. Yeah. That's where I learned all my advanced techniques, my wave dashing. When I started wave dashing before everybody else, oh, wave dashing's stupid.
Yeah. No,
I remember that was the first one to learn it.
Yeah, that was our 16th summer. That's when I learned about like IVs and EVs and Pokemon.
Oh yeah, man, that was an intense summer.
Yeah,
we were just gaming, man. Yeah. We were gaming. Yeah. That's what you do when you're in high school and you're summer and you're in the summer and you're too lazy to get a job.
You stay up till 6 in the morning every day playing video games.
Yep. Those were the days. So anyway, this is your this is a Nintendo podcast, as you well know by now from the intro. Matthew and Chubba, how are you guys doing?
I'm doing great, man. Doing great.
Swell.
All right.
Living the dream.
Matthew just ate
how
some
Arby's, are you doing?
Yeah.
Some curly
That's
fries.
A great
how are you doing, gamer?
How are you?
I'm doing all right.
What you been gaming on lately?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a segue into our first segment now playing. I've been playing Super Princess Peach. I know that's weird. It's a weird reach, but hear me out on this. I never got the chance to play it originally because, you know, cooties, but I finally got around to it just this past week. And it's a pretty cool game. It's not mind-blowing or anything, but it's pretty cool.
You know what's funny? I remember the name. I have no idea what the game is. It's weird. I feel like was it a Game Boy Advance game?
DS.
DS. See, I don't remember it. I have no recollection.
On the top display, you have a sprite-based Peach, and then on the bottom screen, you've got her emotions. We'll get into that in a second. But the graphics of the game, it looks like more of a spinoff of Yoshi's Island than it does of Mario, if you can believe that. It's weird. Like, the graphics and stuff look a little more Yoshi's Island-esque. The controls, the platforming, all that stuff kind of feels similar. And the game has more of an emphasis on exploration, because there's these toads that you have to get in every level, you know, kind of like Rayman, got to bust them out of their cage.
Caught my interest.
And you have to get all of the toads in the entire game or you don't get to play the last level, which I think is dumb, but it's fun to explore.
The completionist in me actually prefers things like that to a degree. I like having the option to do either or, but it's like when I played Zelda Breath of the Wild, I had to beat every shrine before I went to Ganon. I couldn't do it.
I could feel that.
Yeah, me too.
My favorite part about the game is that it's done what I've always wanted in a Mario game, for them to just give Mario like other abilities instead of just containing him to jumping. I mean, the simplicity is cool and all that stuff. I get it. I get it,
but I also,
give me a Mario game. Give him a slide attack. Give him, you know, the 1-2 punch from Mario 64. And Peach, throughout the game, there's actually an incentive to collect coins. Mm-hmm. So in a Mario game, coins are just like, they're there. I mean, at this point where the Mario games have gotten easier, like, they're just there. There's not really any reason to collect them except for the satisfying little jingle that happens when you touch one of those bad boys. Mm-hmm. But in Super Princess Peach, you get money, and you use that to buy other abilities. You can increase your health, you can increase your 5-meter, you can buy abilities to, like, slam down into the ground, all sorts of cool stuff. And I think that's a cool way to incentivize you to collect coins. So I think it's just taking that Mario formula, spinning it a little bit. The stages are really long. I mean, if you're finding all the toads in them, you're probably going to spend 7 minutes an entire stage. And, man, you give me 7 minutes in New Super Mario Bros., I could probably beat a world. Mm-hmm. And I like that. I like that concept.
Yeah, well, I was going to say on the exploration thing, it's all within context. Like, I think collecting everything is fun if it's within reason. Now, if you're talking like a Yoshi game where, you know, you have to finish the level with all your health, you have to find all of the red coins, you have to find all of the smiley flowers, then it's like, I can kind of pass some of that up. Or like Donkey Kong 64, there's yellow bananas, and there's red bananas, and there's blue bananas, and there's banana fairies, and there's banana coins, and, you know, and it's just like, all right.
Yeah, I like that simplification.
Give me the banana and I'll be on my way.
There's toads and puzzle pieces and that's it.
Right.
Now, I imagine this game got a pretty bad rap because of, you know, it's the first game where you're ever playing Princess Peach. And what's the hook of the game is that she gets really emotional because she's a girl. Which, I, like, Yeah, I thought that was kind of a downside to the game. It's a cool mechanic where you got on the bottom screen, you can be angry and you bash through enemies, you can cry and you spray water everywhere. And there's cool ways that the game uses that. But the story of the game is that everybody on the island is emotional. Now that I understand that, Peach is just the only one who can control it. So it's more of like, you know, it's still kind of a stereotype, but you know, Peach is emotionally mature, she can control it. Whereas there's like Goombas and Koopas, you know, you'll find a mad Koopa with wings, and it's just like, oh my god,
oh my god,
he just charges you out of nowhere, just with this angry look on his face. And then there's these Goombas that are crying, I just can't do this anymore. Take me, Mario, take me. And I think that was such a cool concept because it brings a lot of enemy variety without having to create entire new enemies. So these Goombas run at you. They'll jump at you. These Koopas are just, I'm going to put you in my shell.
Yeah. I would like to, and you can like step on my toes if I'm wrong. I would like to see her have a game where she's not like the damsel in distress. I want to see her like have a game.
Well, she isn't. The story is.
No. I see what you're saying, but the whole like emotional aspect, I want to see her have her Breath of the Wild Zelda moment, if that makes any sense. Zelda in that game, it seems like she's not the typical like, oh, I'm like, I need to be saved. Like, oh, I'm just a spellcaster. Like, she seemed like she was a little bit more like, a little tougher, kind of more Games of Thrones-y, if that makes any sense.
Like,
you know what I'm saying? Like, I want to see that kind of aspect of her where she's like Captain Marvel, like,
I also just feel like they should make a different character for that. I mean, because like Nintendo, you know, it's weird, like Peach has always kind of been that stereotypical princess, just you know, teacups and prancing down, and I feel like, you know, Peach kind of owns it at this point. You know, if you want your really your boss lady, then, you know, go no further than Metroid, and that's been around since the 80s. So, I mean, it's, you know...
But you see what I'm saying?
Like, but the cool part is that Mario and Luigi got kidnapped because they made everybody emotional in the castle and tied everybody up, so you actually go and save them.
I would love to see a game where, like, she does all of that, then in the end, Mario and Luigi come, hey, so what have you been up to? Oh, nothing. Just like a day in the life, but what they don't see, what she really gets into when they're not there to try to quote-unquote save her.
Yeah, I'd like another one. I mean, it was cool. Like, I like these kind of ancillary Mario games almost more than the mainline series. Mm-hmm. I know. It, you know, crucify me. But I Yoshi's Island, Wario Land, mm-hmm. Super Princess Peach. I'm all about it.
Yeah,
I'm all about it. I want more of it. So, Matthew, what have you been playing?
Oh, it's funny that you should ask. Speaking
playing
of
that Yoshi's
Yoshi,
Crappy World?
No, it's Yoshi's Crafted World, and it's amazing. It's a craft of joy.
A craft of joy.
It's incredible. It's honestly, what's so funny about the game, and is honestly a little perplexing, is that I've never seen a game go from looking so underwhelming to being so incredibly fun. It's a complete 180. And if you look at like the early showing at E3, there's a lot of stuff in those trailers that didn't even make it into the game. Like, there's one boss they show with like train tracks, and there is a train boss, but it's completely different, and it's so much more exciting. It's so much more aesthetically pleasing as well. Like, it's, you know, fun to look at, but also play. But yeah, the game just, it has this really interesting art direction where it takes all these different shapes and elements like cardboard and things, and just, you know, makes shapes and platforms out of them. And I don't know, it's great. And I haven't even played co-op yet, and apparently co-op makes it even more fun. I started watching some co-op play, and like Yoshi can ride on the Yoshi's back, the other Yoshi's back, and he has like unlimited eggs, and I'm like, what? And
yeah,
boss battles, that sounds incredible.
Man, yeah, it looks really good.
So a website that will remain nameless said it's a very enjoyable and delightfully charming Yoshi platformer that doesn't really strive to be much more like Breath of the Wild or for Zelda or like Odyssey for Mario. It's formulaic, and at times that can make it feel as thin as realistic cardboard sets on the game.
Yeah, I don't want to hear that. That's garbage. No, it's you know what? Most websites have actually given it really good reviews, and I know which one you're referring to, and you know those guys.
Okay, I just want...
I don't know, man.
No, because, you know, when I read that, I'm like, huh, that seems a little hard. So I just, like, you know, you playing it, I know you've
it's
been playing
it. It's the great plague
like
of any video game is just that you're going to get two criticisms, one of two criticisms. It's too much like the last one. it's not enough like the last one. And, you know, I don't know, for these websites that rave about every, like, incremental improvement about the last Assassin's Creed to this Assassin's Creed, it's, I don't know, my eyes roll off of my head. Like, it's okay to play a game that's similar to the last game, like, 3 years later. Now, there is two similar. That's when we get into New Super Mario Brothers territory, where it's like literally like you could almost not distinguish these two if not for the graphical leap. But yeah, I'm surprised by how seeing all the demos and stuff, I was like, this game's gonna suck. Mm-hmm. And they kept like just being hush hush about it. They wouldn't say anything about it. It seemed like it got quietly delayed.
Yeah, it took forever because it got announced. When did it get announced?
Forever ago.
Yeah, it got announced.
It was one of
like
the first Switch games that got announced, but. Yeah, so I thought
it didn't even
like
have
garbage.
A name for like 2 years.
And seeing you play it, I'm like, looks like it's very fluid, and the level design is fun. And man, there's just not enough games that play with visual art style. You know, every few years we get one of them. You know, we got Little Big Planet or Tearaway. We've got some indie games like Monument Valley that play with it, but not enough people really play with interesting art styles. And so I'm glad that Nintendo's actually putting some resources into it.
It was actually amazing. Like I'm like him. I didn't really start to think the game was much of anything until I saw you play it on my TV. I'm like, oh wow, this looks dope. Like I love the way just the look and the feel of the game and everything. It really made me want to go out and buy it. And I think I heard you say, I don't know if you still agree with it a week later, that you think is better than Woolly World. Would you still go by that?
Yeah. I think it's one of the best Yoshi games ever made. And Woolly World is too, but I would put it above that. One thing I was going to say, though, just to, you know, kind of wrap things up here with Yoshi, is that, you know, I don't go based off of some of those review websites entirely. I think when you get a general consensus, I think that's when it's safe to assume a game is good. And for Yoshi, it's been the 8 and above, 8 out of 10 and above. But I don't know, man. Some of those, like one you just mentioned, I mean, we'll give a game praise for not being fun. But, it, you know, Michael and I joke about it all the time, how, you know, you look at this hill and the way the rocks slide down the hill and the gravel, it's so realistic. 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
And that's all I have to say about that. But yeah, Yoshi, it's great. It's creative. It's play it. Mm. Play it!
Okay. I'm with it.
Yeah, I'm excited to jump into it. Trevor, what have you been playing?
Okay, so sue me, everybody. I have the one game that's not a Nintendo game I've been playing. I finally decided to get back into playing Final Fantasy X. Final Fantasy X, to be more correct.
Wait a second. Isn't that on the Switch now?
Oh, that one.
Oh, yeah. They did port it on the Switch now. Well, never mind.
So you can play it there, too.
Yeah, you can. I'm playing the PS4 version because I've had it for like years since it came out.
I think
out.
It's the PS4 version that got ported to Switch.
Yeah, yeah. I bought that game like 3 different times. Way to go, Square Enix. But yeah, no, I started playing that.
Is the laughing scene still in?
Dude, let it go. It's not that bad. It's not that bad. It's not that bad.
Go to Google Final Fantasy X laughing scene.
He will let the smallest thing take away points. Like, no,
that's not
man.
The smallest thing. That was.
I wish we could put that in this
it's
podcast.
Like, literally
yeah, might,
2 minutes.
I'll inject it in.
It's like not even long. It's a small little like cutscene.
Yeah, I still like the game. I beat
it's
it.
Okay. No.
How far are you now?
Well, one thing I just got past getting Ifrit, so I'm like not far in the game. But I do love the fact, I mean, the cool thing about, I love how they, even though Final Fantasy, they got all these different games, I love the fact that they try to do a different thing with each one. I love the fact that it's not really levels in that game. There's just a sphere grid, and you can, like, make people.
Oh, sphere grid was awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like, you can make somebody, like, I have this one, like, the one character, Kamari. I'm trying to make him more of, like, a mage type, as well as, like, strengthening his strength, while also I'm going to, like, make Tidus, of course, go his route, but also, like, learn some of Auron's moves so he could be more of the power guy, but also the speed and thief guy, too. Like, you know, it's just really cool to, like, have, like, basically be able to customize your character in a way. I'm having a good time playing it. I'm also looking at, I'm trying to be forgiving because, you know, I call it the fish effect, like, when it comes to, like, how they speak. They'll just, their lips will just move, but it doesn't really align with what they're saying.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's aligned with the Japanese, yeah, but they didn't redo it for
it's
English.
Not even. I don't even think they really did.
Most games
much.
Don't.
Yeah, and I kind of got to give them some slack because it was like a PS2 game. They're coming from PlayStation 1 where they didn't have that before. So I'm kind of trying to give them the benefit of the doubt. They did, but it just even just looking at the world in which they set up, that is a lot to go from what they set up in the PlayStation 1 era to that. I mean, I do have to give them props. And I am enjoying the game. It is fun.
I mean, but I feel like that's more, I mean, Resident Evil, that's always been a thing. And even older Sonic games even had that same problem.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I feel like it's pretty common, which is, you know, you can excuse that.
Well,
just because
I think in games, it's like, I mean, you know, and I could be totally wrong about this, but in 2D animation, you're editing lip flaps. And that's stuff where, like, you know, we were talking about Team Four Stars, Dragon Ball Abridged thing earlier. Like, their small team of YouTube people can edit lip flaps to make them sync with the voices that they're putting into the project. Mm. It's a little bit tougher with games, because then you're getting into, like, you know, moving the actual model. I would think it sounds tougher, but yeah, that game is really cool. I remember customizing Riku, one of the fast people, to be fast, and I would cast the time spell on them and get to like cast six spells in a row. No,
it's like I really dig that. I mean, the only thing that's like really annoying me, I just had to play Blitzball, and it was just annoying because I was too proud to want to skip past the scene. You could win or lose; the game will continue on. But I really wanted to win for my homie Waka, man. I wanted him to win his first Waka. Waka. But the problem is the game, and they do this with like every Final Fantasy game, where they have these mini games that you have to play. You have to know how to play them in order to proceed and get some of the best things in the game. And the mechanics of the mini game don't make much of any sense, and yet you still have to maneuver around it.
Yeah, that's one of I need to make like a top 10 list of like things to not do in games.
Yeah.
That's up there.
Oh, that's the
all
old,
of a sudden Ratchet and Clank killed me with that too. There's like certain games that do it where they're like, all right, so we've been training you in this game how to run, how to jump, how to glide. All right, now you got to play this game where you're trying to choke a chicken and, you know, throw him over the fence.
You talking about Ratchet and Clank or Jack and Daxter?
All of them, man. No, there's so many games that do it, and they're like, hey, here's this thing you've never done before. Or like the Mario Galaxy games where it's like, now you have to blow up trash in a very...
or no, running on the ball and using the Wii remote to stabilize the ball in the direct... No, but the... So, you know what started all that was all the, wasn't it the Rare games like Banjo-Kazooie and Donkey Kong?
Yeah.
You remember Donkey Kong 64 where you have to race the beetle? You remember that beetle that's like in a bonus challenge?
Yeah.
And there's one you have to race him with Lanky on like ice and you have to use his handstand move and it's like nearly impossible. And he just laughs at you and he's like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, like, but when they... You know, and like when you're doing that for the sake of variety and you don't absolutely need to do that to beat the game, okay, you get a little bit of a pass there. But like, just if you're going to do some weird segue into a completely different genre in your game, make it easy enough so that like I enjoy it. I enjoy the Switch and it doesn't turn into this frustrating thing where I have to learn an entire new game now 15 hours
into this. And
those
are always the hardest aspects of the game.
Yeah,
that's the part that's the most frustrating is that it's like, I get this as like a side thing, but like Mario Odyssey even had that with some of the little toy race cars, but they were easy. I'm like, if you have it and it's easy, that's fine. But like even Yooka-Laylee, you know, I don't know why they thought, you know, we're bringing back the old great games, and like those parts of them were not great whatsoever, and they brought that back, and there's one near the end of the game that's just impossible. That's when I stopped playing the game. I'm like, well, guess I'm just not going to finish.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's frustrating when you look up, and it's like hours later, and you're still doing the same minigame, because, of course, at that time, I guess it was too smart to just press start and be able to skip cutscenes. I have to rewatch all these cutscenes again.
Oh, my gosh.
So yeah. I was getting frustrated. There was literally one point in the whole Blitzball game where I was like, a score was supposed to go in. But somehow it didn't go in because, like, it got blocked or something. Its own mechanics didn't work. And I just sat in silence for, like, a few seconds. And I just screamed at the game, this doesn't make any sense! Like, you know, so components like that is what makes me frustrated with the game. But I really am excited to play it. I told myself I'd play that game just one day a week, and I played it at least a few times. I'm happy to play it. I can't wait. It's like I play one Final Fantasy game a year, and I think that's going to be my one. And yeah, once I finish with that, I'll get back to playing Majora's Mask that I just got back from somebody who will remain nameless, Michael.
Yeah. Yeah, I beat that game. That was an interesting little ride. So let's jump into our news segment, The Rundown. Where we sift through. Imagine me. I got a sifter, water, sand, diamonds.
Okay.
All falling through. All
right.
I'm grabbing the best news information, bringing them to you for this discussion. So our first news item on the list, courtesy of PocketGamer.biz. Pokemon Go has just crossed the $2.5 billion mark in revenue.
$1 billion.
So, some things to consider about these earnings. Now, the the Pokemon Company is not taking all this money home. Anything on the App Store or the Google Play Store has to share 30% of their earnings mm-hmm. with Apple or Google. And then you'd assume something between 1% and 30% for Niantic. But yeah, what do you guys think about that?
I mean, that's amazing in a sense. I mean, well, no, it's amazing.
in a sense.
No, because, I mean, even with what they got to split with these other companies, they're still walking away with, like, a billy from an app.
Oh, billy?
A billy. And, you know, that's amazing. And the other thing about that is, like, I think even with just that, even with after they split that money, I think it's still generating more money. More money combined with the games they came out with, right? Like, because when you combine the games they've come out with, like, even when you add up all of those in totality, I don't know if it's really...
So, I guess Daniel Ahmed, I don't know if I'm saying his last name right. I'm sorry, dude, if I didn't. He's a digital games analyst for Nico Partners. He did a little comparison, just kind of like a rough shot comparison. Sun and Moon, Ultra Sun and Moon, and Let's Go all sold a combined... $1.6 billion. That's what the gross in revenue based on units sold and the suggested retail pricing. That number isn't like 100% because, you know, of course they're going to make more money off of they might make a little more money off of the ones that they sell at the eShop rather than the the like a Walmart or something based on whatever deal they have with Nintendo. But it's still, I mean, what it shows me is that this is like an entire new gaming mm-hmm. pillar for Pokemon.
Yeah.
I who knows how long it'll last. I feel like it's going to start dipping after this Diamond and Pearl generation, but who knows? I mean, everybody thought it was going to be a fad that was over in a few months.
Well, that I was going to say, like, you know me, Mr. Pokemon Go over here. I actually stopped playing probably close to a year ago. I haven't really touched the game, and I can't believe it's actually been that long now that I'm looking at it. I'm like, wow. But I kind of gave it up for a little while, and, you know, I've checked the app every now and then, but I still haven't caught any Diamond and Pearl Pokemon. But it's weird, because I started to feel like, I mean, you and I used to play the game, Michael, like when it first came out, and you would just see people, I mean, you remember me, I was like a week in and like didn't really get what the hype was about, I wasn't playing it, and you'd go anywhere public and you would just see like hundreds of people with their phones out catching Pokemon. The like phenomenon. That first week it was out was like just this moment where humanity was in unison just catching Pokemon. It was a great thing. And, you know, ever since in its decline, where like sometimes I'll be at parks and I can tell I'm the only person playing. But then you look at these numbers, and then, you know, you were just telling me you saw a raid for one of the legendary Pokemon, Giratina, and there was like 20-30 people. And I'm like, see, I haven't seen that in a while. And so it's really interesting that it seems like it's continued to go on and on. And even when I met people who played the game, I mean, there's so many people that had like four or five different accounts. Hmm. They would like catch the same legendary Pokemon like 30, 40 times and, you know, level them up.
There's some
with
freaks
their...
out there.
It's just weird. It's like, I mean, to me, that's another full-time job.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I play, you MMOs, know me, man. I played it a lot and I still got nowhere near. I mean, I still think I left off at like level 35. So, I mean, I was pretty close to that level 40 cap, but it's just, it's wild, man. And so, I don't, it's surprising, but it's great. And it helps Pokemon because they've shown sales numbers for all merchandise, games, all these different things. It's only gone up since, you know, Pokemon Go. So
yeah, well, and that's in the merchandising side of Pokemon, the licensing, which this is a part of. This is a Pokemon license, not so much of a game development thing for them because they're outsourcing all of it to Niantic. And it's just interesting because... that's like kind of the other side of Pokemon that you wouldn't know is just so successful. And this is the type of stuff that brought them to be the highest grossing brand, in the highest grossing media brand in the world. Hmm. And you know, it's when you look at that, it's not surprising. And my question has always been, if Pokemon Go was as fully featured, was like more fully featured and less buggy there at the beginning, would that number be higher?
Even greater?
Could it be double? That's kind of my argument, and you know, partially for my, that's why I'm a little disappointed in Sword and Shield, Because it looks like this very safe bet, like they're almost worried that it's not going to do that well, so they're not going to, you know, do the crazy revamp of mm-hmm. any visuals or gameplay elements because they're scared of, like, you know, alienating some of their audience or whatever. Well, man, I don't know what it is. I think it's just kind of apathy and making safe bets. And, you know, I don't begrudge them as a business for making safe bets, but as a work of art, it's kind of...
Well, I'll throw you another idea. I don't even think it's a safe bet. I think it's complacency, because I think they know that people don't care.
Yeah, you know, because they're going to buy it anyway.
Yeah, because like it's been that way since then, and obviously Pokemon mm-hmm. Go is nothing extraordinary. I think it looks really great for an app game, but I think it just goes to show you that like people are not interested in the visuals, and I think that's why the buzz around Sword and Shield is so high. I think that's why it was around Let's Go, and it's literally just the same assets as Pokemon Go. I think in Sword and Shield, they added darker outlines to the models.
The assets started with Pokemon X, and they created them with the ability to scale up and down very well. And, you know, Pokemon has always had this very simple art style that does that. But what's frustrated me is that it's been 6 years since that. It's time to, like, do a little something. And, like, I don't need them to all look like they look in Pokken. You know, obviously that would be, like, the height of what you could get out of a Pokemon is a little more textured fur or scales or anything like that. Of course, they can't give that level of detail to over 700 monsters, but like step sort of in that direction, or like give them more animations, or and you know, we don't know everything about Sword and Shield yet, but we know that they're probably not going to have walking animations. We're not going to see them hiding in the bushes or flying, and we're not going to be able to chase them. They're going to be hiding in a parallel dimension within the grass.
It's just upsetting because, I mean, they announced this, what, 2 years ago? So, you know, the way they hyped it up, I feel like this is a...
Are you talking about they announced Pokemon Go 2 years ago?
No, when they announced the new Pokemon game.
Yeah, this turned into a bash sword.
like, you know, when they announced it a couple years ago, because, you know, they made it seem like it was going to be something more, you know, especially when Let's Go came out. They were like, hey, guys, listen, don't worry. This is not the main game we got coming out. This is just another installment. So to see Sword and Shield and then to be kind of disappointed with what it looked like, because I feel like, from what I saw, it seems like Let's Go looks better than Sword and Shield.
Yeah, and
they're very much on par with each other.
I don't know. That's why I think the apologists around it are like, look, there's nothing wrong with being objective and saying, like, I'm sure the game will still be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
But is there a lot left to be desired? Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's a crime of missed potential.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much more that they could do, and they have the capital. They have, you know, they co-publish the game. It's not even Game Freak entirely that's on the line for publishing the game. They do it through the Pokemon Company, which is a joint venture between Nintendo, Creatures Inc., and Game Freak. So, I mean, there's a lot of, like, shared risk, and therefore they have to share the profits. But, I mean, Game Freak, the company, is still making money off of every merchandise purchase and all that stuff because mm-hmm. of their stake in the Pokemon Company. So they got the money. I just think they need to start putting it on the table, because I don't think this Pokemania craze, I don't know if it's going to come again. I mean, there was the initial one that came because it was a new thing. It hit at just the right time in the 90s. And then there was the second one because everybody had a phone and everybody was downloading this game, and AR was like this emergent technology. I don't know if this... I think the... I mean, clearly, as we saw from this news piece, that Pokemon Go is doing fine, but I think that window of excitement and enthusiasm about the Pokemon brand is going to be closing.
Oh, it peaked.
It's going to peak and then start to close, and I think this was their chance to really come out of the gate with something special. And they did this with the anime. The Pokemon Sun and Moon anime got a total facelift. They kind of switched out art styles. They put a little more resources into the animation, rethought, you know, what the Pokemon anime should be. And I think they did a really great job. But it's time to do that with the mainline series games and really give them a facelift. And like I said, gameplay element-wise, maybe there's a bunch of stuff that we're missing, but I'm going to guess that it's about what we saw in the trailer, plus there's going to be some wacky evolution gimmick where your Pokemon has a sword or a shield
armor or something. They're probably planning on riding this wave out until they see some sort of decline in revenue and things like that, and then they'll probably be like, all right, now we're going to flesh out a better looking Pokemon experience and things like that. So, yeah.
So let me just make sure I'm getting this right. So are we all in agreement that they kind of dropped the ball with Sword and Shield?
I don't think they dropped the ball. It's just that they didn't capitalize
off the opportunity they had.
Sounds like they dropped the ball.
I mean, they're going for a foul shot. You know, they're going for a little LeBron James. Ah, he breathed on me, and you know, getting an easy two instead of doing a monster dunk.
Yeah,
when they could have done a monster dunk.
Could have dunked on him.
It's still two points, but not all 2 points are created equal.
And I'm not saying this out of like hatred for Pokemon. I absolutely adore the franchise. It's probably the franchise that I like most outside of Super Smash Brothers. But I say it out of
Donkey Kong Country.
I say it because I want more out of the series. Maybe more than Donkey Kong Country.
I don't know.
It's tough.
What?
It's tough.
I know for me, anyway. But y'all know me. Like I'm. Like, you know, I was in college my freshman year. I think I played more Pokemon than
yeah, he did more Pokemon than school.
Like, yeah.
He's trying to hatch a shiny Elekid.
Right.
I want to have time, though. I want to get to these Best Buy leaks, though.
Yeah, we gotta move on. We spent a lot of time on Pokemon. We could do a whole podcast.
Sorry, that was
Pokemon.
The Maybe lamest way to bring that topic up.
It was, but hey, listen.
So the Best Buy leaks. Let's get a little overview of it and then go piece by piece. So I heard about this from the Twitter deal hunter, Wario64, if you're looking for good deals on games, he's a great profile to check out. He has, he shared some screenshots and said he had seen internal proof for Persona 5 coming to Switch, and we saw similar leaks for Best Buy leaking Joker's Smash render, which has since been removed, which is pretty much a sign that that someone made an oopsie over there. We've also got some rumor evidence that Metroid Prime Trilogy and some form of A Link to the Past are coming to Best Buy. They're all in their sort of internal inventory systems. So I want to start with Persona 5. And none of us have played that game, I think, right?
No.
None of us have played any Persona game,
no.
Right?
Okay, no interest.
Yeah. yeah, it's a little outside my wheelhouse, the whole like Japanese school kid thing. I know it's cool. It's kind of like Pokemon. I've heard great things about it. Might try Persona 5.
Yeah.
But I think the Persona 5 thing is totally spot on. The timing is right, and you have to imagine that Nintendo is interested in bringing the franchise onto Switch. Mm-hmm. I don't even think that it would take too much of a dive performance-wise, considering that it worked on the PS3. It was a cross-platform game for PS3 and PS4. And the PS3 was notoriously difficult to develop for. And so I think I think that's a def.
That's probably why they said Nintendo chose the DLC fighters to be in this fighter pass, which, you know, speaking of leaks, there's leaks that there will be two more fighter passes, at least, based on the number of slots found in, like, a data mine and everything like that. But that's beside the point. For this fighter pass, if it's the only one or if there's more to come, regardless, apparently Nintendo picked these fighters, so it actually makes perfect sense that they would pick him because... You know, I've actually criticized some of the third-party additions because I'm like even Snake, I think Snake's cool, but like Snake does nothing for Nintendo. Cloud does nothing for Nintendo. Cloud's game was literally like a, you know...
It was a big...
It was a shot at Nintendo, essentially. No. And so this would make total sense. So I think the render is, like you said, completely spot on. Did you address the other ones yet? Besides Joker.
No, so we were just talking about Persona 5. So, yeah, I don't think there's much else to say about that. I could definitely see that happening. And Persona has performed really well on handheld games. The Persona 4 Golden performed really, really well on the PlayStation Vita. So I think that's going to be something that they're interested in. Segue to the Metroid Prime Trilogy.
You didn't hear what I said, did you? Yeah. I said it must have been the only game that did.
Yeah.
I like the Vita.
I mean, the Vita had potential too.
I had a great time with it, but let's not turn this into a Vita podcast.
Fall into a rabbit hole.
The Metroid Prime Trilogy has been long rumored, and I'm 50-50 on it. So let me just sow my confusion and then you guys sort me out.
Okay.
So I'm 50-50 on this. On one hand, I think that it's going to happen to satiate fans while they completely retool Metroid Prime 4. But on the other hand, I don't know if they're like totally game for reworking Metroid Prime 3 to work with a Wii Remote. Seems like a little too much work for a Nintendo port. You know what I mean?
That's true, though. When you think about like other Nintendo ports and how they fail to change like vital mechanics or, you know, they just don't retool games the way they should to work on a different platform. So I can totally see that happening. I think it's going to happen just because of the Metroid Prime 4 debacle, if you will. Like how that game was in development for what, like a year? And then they're just like, hey, so this isn't happening anymore. We're actually starting from the ground up.
From the ground up. Just that like Donkey Kong Country Returns on the 3DS. From the ground up. That means half the frame rate and it doesn't work in two-player mode anymore.
They got rid of the thing that worked in co-op. The thing I praise Donkey Kong Country's co-op for, they actually got rid of. And I'm like, now you just made it like every co-op game that doesn't work
correctly. Although, yeah. I imagine we're in a minority of people who actually played it in co-op. But yeah, that phrase is hilarious to me with games from the ground up.
Yeah. Like, but that's an interesting perspective.
I'm sure remaking games is harder than we make it out to be as, like, you know, consumers of the product. Mm-hmm. But also, I mean, come on, some of this stuff is like, especially some of these Wii U to Switch ports, it's like Hyrule Wars. It's also got the 3DS stuff that we charged it for, but now
New Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe. It's like, all you did was give us the same game. You added Luigi U, which was a separate purchase, but all you did was add a mechanic that actually made it harder to play, which is by pressing the jump button twice, you activate a little spin jump.
That'll go down as the greatest war crime to ever be committed in the gaming industry.
But so I just want to say I actually didn't think about that. This is the first time I'm hearing you mention that. That's an interesting perspective because, Prime. So they did make Metroid Prime 1 and 2 work with the Wii remotes. They did retool those for the trilogy that was released on the Wii.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah.
So they did do that. So I imagine it can't be that hard. Otherwise, like you said, Nintendo wouldn't touch it, especially for a franchise that didn't sell that well.
Well, but to add motion controls, I feel
like... Well, it didn't sell bad. Let me rephrase
that.
They
made a habit of adding motion controls to a bunch of games. I think they put it in Pikmin.
Which made
they put
it
in
worse.
Mario Power Tennis. Yeah, Mario Power Tennis on the Wii is just... Oh, my gosh.
But I can't... I literally...
My arm hurt playing that game. But taking it out... Like, I mean, what... Because they're not going to force you to only play it docked, where you have separate Joy-Con, one acting as a sort of replacement.
Oh,
Wii remote.
They might actually.
How's
do
it
going
to work in portable? Do you have to tilt the entire system?
They're
probably
going
to do that, where you're like you're going to rotate. Your
I hope
system
not.
Because open a door.
I really hope not, because like I actually like Metroid Prime, but I can't play the third game, and it's the one I want to play the most. I think it's so cool that they created a planet for the space pirates, which has always been one, but you actually go to it. They like, you know, fleshed this out, made it a thing. And so, like, it's the game I've wanted to play the most, but I just, that game with motion controls is so hard for me to play. I completely beat the first two, 100%. But I just can't do the third one for that very reason. And
you beat the second game?
Yeah, yeah.
That one is long. Continue. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I also watched playthroughs that showed me where every single thing was before I did it, just because I wanted to 100% it. But that's why I hope it comes out, because I actually like the Metroid Prime series. But if it forces you to play motion like Joy-Cons, which I actually didn't consider as a possibility, I might consider staying away from that, because I'm like, I can just play the Wii version at that point.
Yeah,
unless there's like some significant upgrade. I mean, having a Metroid game like that on portable is, you know, that's always the sell with Switch. They could put literally anything. It's like, have you ever played a portable? So, I mean, there's that. What
I
were you
like
saying,
it. No, I mean, I'm kind of with both of you guys. I personally think just options are always good. It's one thing if they have a feature like motion controls on, motion controls off, that'd be great. But if they don't have a feature like that, if you have to like tilt it like you do with Let's Go when you don't have it docked in order to catch, that's
well, that's how Prime 3 was, and the Prime Trilogy Collection. There was no option to turn motion controls off. And I will say it's kind of weird that this would be the third time they're re-releasing these games. Because there's obviously the original trilogy, then the Trilogy Collection, and now would be this. It'd be interesting because that franchise, I mean, like, people criticized Retro when they made Tropical Freeze, but Country Returns literally, and we've talked about this before, outsold the entire Prime Trilogy. So they would be showing a lot of love and devotion to a series that, in their eyes, I don't think performed all too well. I mean, 2 million units per game, that's nothing to scoff at, but
you know, it's one of Nintendo's B-tier franchises, and I think that's that they know what they're doing. It's fine. If I mean, Fire Emblem occupies that space too, where they've got like a a smaller but very dedicated fan base, as opposed to, like, you know, counting on the masses to buy it
right.
by putting, you know, a cute character like Mario or Donkey Kong on there. I think Donkey Kong's cute.
It's what if they put Donkey Kong in Fire Emblem, gave him some armor?
Yeah, I want a Donkey Kong Fire Emblem crossover.
That would be hilarious. I would be the first one buying
it. Donkey Kong!
So I picture Donkey Kong having, like, a sword made out of crystal coconuts. What would Diddy Kong's weapon be, though? That's the one that interests me, because I could just see him in some, like, armor, just looking hilarious.
He's got two hand axes.
Yes! Yeah.
Two hand axes, or maybe he's like a mage or something like that. He like
Diddy Kong casting spells.
Yeah, casting peanuts, or like a big.
No, that's Cranky. Cranky's the mage.
Yeah, yeah. Cranky would totally be the mage.
Oh my goodness!
You give him like,
and
like,
he can't be like Gandalf. You shall
picture like Kamek's robe on like Cranky Kong, and that's a character, man.
Yeah.
But anyways,
yeah. So Metroid Prime Trilogy, I could see it happening. I could also see it not happening. So
yeah.
the one that's got me really interested is this Link to the Past thing. Like, I mean, surely it's not some sort of physical release for the Switch, or is it?
Wait, so are they talking about but isn't that the game they're remaking?
Link's Awakening is the one that they're remaking. So
okay,
I'm guessing
so,
like,
there's too many.
Maybe they just misnamed it. Maybe there's some sort of mistaken listing for that as opposed to the Necrodancer crossover. But I'm very curious what they're talking. Are they going to sell that? Are they going to? I could see a world when Nintendo sells a cartridge of this game for $10.
Wait, so my question is A Link to the Past, is that?
That's a Super Nintendo one.
So wait, which one's the... Okay, so Link Between Worlds is the 3DS one.
Yes.
Which was also...
I always get those games mixed up.
Yeah, it's because...
the titles I get
Worlds
mixed up.
Was sort of a remake. It was a sequel, but it used all the same... It used the same map for the most part.
Wait, so they're talking about re-releasing the Super Nintendo...
I
can't see that happening.
Nobody really knows. It's just the title that's in there. And maybe that's the thing that like shows us that this rumor is just dumb and shouldn't be believed, but... I don't know. I have no idea
what to expect of it. Maybe something for the online system, you know, because you know the online thing comes with the NES games.
Maybe yeah, I mean, it could vary. Well, it could very well
be
something.
Best Buy listing.
Well, but here's the thing: like, it's like their inventory listing. It could be like a gift card for Nintendo Switch Online, and it has a Link to the Past on the on the card. So, like, I could see something like that happening. Maybe they start to bring Super Nintendo games into it, and then you can go to a Target or whatever store, and you see a Link to the Past in a card, and that catches your attention to buy the Switch Online service. Maybe that's what the only one that makes sense to me. But who knows?
Well, I can tell you really quick before you move on, what is believable with Nintendo is reselling older games that take no effort to port over to a new system or reselling that to you. That I could see happening because they do that on like every system. They'll never resell you GameCube games that would actually take effort to port over. But man, those Super Nintendo and NES games.
ROMs.
Yeah.
Drag and drop them, white boy.
And I will be the simpleton buying it too. Because Metroid Trilogy, I'll buy two, please. Thank you very much.
So, next news story. The Labo VR kit will support both Mario Odyssey and Breath of the Wild. This comes courtesy of labo.nintendo.com/kits/VR-kit. And this is just the weirdest, wackiest thing. Mario Odyssey and Breath of the Wild getting VR support from this wacky little cardboard strap on your forehead. It's hilarious, and I'm going to buy it. Definitely. Because inside of this, without question, because I like some of the Labo stuff anyway. I really like the concept. I, you know, I've done it with my kids. It's super fun. But there's more Odyssey levels inside of this VR mode. I would eat my left Joy-Con to play a few more Odyssey levels.
So you know what the reason is for this? I can tell you without a doubt is because they're not selling any Labos. Because I think when I told you, when I got one for my girlfriend's son, you know, the guy at GameStop, I've never seen somebody at a retail store like negotiate with me, but I'm looking, I'm like, oh, but it's 60. I'll give it to you right now for 40. Wait, what? Like, I'll sell it to you right now for 40. I was like, I don't know, but I'll do 30. And I literally bought like a $60, $70, the robot kit, however much that is, for like $30.
Yeah, they really jacked up on the pricing.
But he told me it's like because they're not selling any. And I think this is their way of marketing that. And I'll tell you, like, even when I got it, man, that thing is a doozy. Like, It takes like hours to even complete setting up before you can play. And I think I think that's the part that actually is daunting to like kids, because I couldn't even keep him interested long enough. You know, he's looking at the thing. He's like, I don't know what to do. But regardless, I think that's their way of trying to drum up buzz around it and get people to buy it. It's like, oh, I can use this in what are Nintendo's two favored children, Mario and Zelda. It's just Mario and Zelda everything. So they're like, we put this in Mario and Zelda, it's going to sell.
Yeah, well, you know, and
if it works, it sure will, because I will be buying one.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've never been super interested in VR because the introduction price is too high. There's a distinct lack of any killer apps, etc., etc. But this is a nifty way to try it out, even if it sucks. Yeah. $40 is a cool asking price, even if it's just a couple lenses and a cardboard shell.
Oh, it's its own Labo thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So, And then the updates will come as part of I would assume a free update on August 25th or April 25th. And so, you know, like I said, I'm down for more Odyssey. There's going to be some new challenges on there that are based on the VR, and Zelda sounds tantalizing. I think the frame rate's going to drop to like 8 frames per second
because
with VR, they have to usually like render the image twice to be able to show it to you. But just Zelda's the one kind of game I'd want to play in VR because it is very immersive.
Yeah.
And just a place I want to just live in. Also, the Switch gets pretty hot, so I think this is going to make your eyes feel really...
Can I tell you something completely random that has to do with Breath of the Wild? And this will just be really quick, but have you seen that somebody on YouTube, or I guess it's some programmer, you've probably heard of it, but he took Breath of the Wild, and instead of doing cel-shaded graphics, he gave it normal or realistic graphics.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny because the game actually looks so much better. It's crazy to me. Like
I don't think it would work as well handheld. And then they're running it on a higher rig.
Yeah, it's. I'm sure it's a performance thing. But like I remember, I saw a video and people were talking about it, and they're just like, man, this actually is a much better looking game. It's really surprising to me, actually.
I imagine it's working a higher rig.
But that was just a random...
For that game, they figured out kind of like a dynamic resolution where the game will kind of like scale in resolution to keep the performance well. I'd imagine they'll eventually figure something like that out to make it look better as well. But yeah, I think this is an interesting strategy. I don't know how invested Nintendo is in VR. I think them doing this rather than actually producing a full-on VR headset is probably indicative of like... It's just a little toy that they're going to do and nothing else. Hmm. But it's interesting to put so much weight behind it by putting their two flagship titles on it. And I'm all for Labo tying into these games. You know, let me make a cardboard GameCube controller and take it to Ultimate, you know?
Yeah. Well, so that's good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah. And I've really enjoyed Labo. I built the piano. My daughter loves it.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it does take a while, man. It's tough.
It takes forever.
So our final news item comes courtesy of Nintendo of America. Stage Builder Mode has been leaked for Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, and this leak comes to us not from GopherGamer6975, whose uncle definitely works at Nintendo, but rather Nintendo of America's marketing team in a new ad spot for the game where the option can be seen at the bottom right-hand corner of the screen.
So I have a question. Can I make a Donkey Kong level with Stage Builder?
Unless it's a jungle.
It's probably going to be not unless it's literally Congo Jungle.
Oh my gosh! Renamed one of the stages from Melee so that it wasn't too similar to. It's one. They named it like Congo Falls instead of Congo Jungle, like it was before, so that didn't clash with Jungle Japes or whatever. And I'm like, but anyways, yeah. I saw the Stage Builder thing. That is interesting. I just hope it's not what Stage Builder's been in Brawl and Smash 4. Because I'll be honest, there's people who like Stage Builder. Stage Builder's been useless. Like, Stage Builder... It's been like gives you the most generic tools to work with. You get like 3 backgrounds and like all these... I don't know, man. I played with it. I tried to play with it a bunch, more so in Brawl. I tried playing with it in Smash 4, and I'm like, this is... Like, we had a friend, Michael and I, Jacob.
Yeah, Jacob made some cool stages.
He would make some stages, and it's just like... They're so uninspired, though.
It was fun to mess around with
for
25 minutes, and then it's a useless feature after that.
I'm hoping since it's in a post-release update, that it's got some interesting things. Like, let me take assets from the actual levels. Like, speaking of Congo Falls, let me take the, you know, the wooden platforms and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like, let me take some stuff like that and throw it together with some. If you can do stuff like that, oh, I'll be all in.
Oh, okay.
Not even if you can, like, do anything crazy, because I think that's asking a lot to, like, make an entirely unique stage. But if I can take actual assets from the levels, like, I think that would be amazing. And I don't see what's wrong with that. They have a battlefield stage for every level, right? So you should be able to distinguish from all those platforms, because they're all the same. They're just different aesthetically.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to let you grab any asset from any level, but...
See, I don't get why,
but hopefully... I mean, just imagine scrolling through 72 platform options.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, people would be it. All for that, though. Like,
I think so, but I don't know. I think it's going to be just... I think it's just there to make it seem like it's another big feature, and it's going to be exactly the same as Brawl, as Smash 4. Oh. But I don't know. We'll see. I just think it's hilarious how this happened. Like, how did the North American marketing team have access to the latest build of Smash that's developed in Japan? Why did they specifically update the game to capture footage for this commercial? Just, like, how did... Because I've done, like, commercial work before, and, like, I know how these things work. Usually they get people in front of a blank TV screen, or they'll have them play the game, but then in post, they're going to put a different render of the game that shows the gameplay clip that they want to show. Mm. And, it's just so funny to me how this actually happened, but I'm pretty lukewarm at it.
I want to give you one prediction from that update I think is going to happen. I think they're going to add the remaining, like, 13 stages, whatever it is, because there's only, like, 13 stages been omitted. That would be awesome. If they added just the other, like, Orbital Gate Assault, Jungle Hijinks from Smash 4.
Give me my
4,
Tropical,
like,
Freeze stage.
Yeah. Oh, I want that, but that doesn't exist yet. Yeah.
Along with Funky Sama.
Funky Sama.
Have you ever built a custom stage, Trevor?
I never have.
I was into it because it was the only, like, normal level I could put Bramble Blast on in Brawl. You know?
Oh, you mean Sticker Bush Symphony?
Yeah. Yeah, because otherwise you're stuck on that, like, ridiculous waterfall level. I'm glad that one didn't come back. I forgot what that was called. It was from, like, Donkey Kong Jungle Beat, the weirdest Donkey Kong game in the lore. So that's all our news for the day. And it's time to jump into the bonus stage.
Bonus.
So the bonus stage
is
where we take a specific topic and really break it down for you. So the topic of the day is this. With the Persona 5 rumor floating around, do you think that this will set the tone for the rest of the DLC fighters in Smash Ultimate? Like, are they going to be third-party tie-ins that function as cross-promotion for franchises to get them on Switch? Who do you think some of the remaining fighters will be if this is the case? We'll go in round robin. You get one to one. You tell me one, and then Trevor will do one, and I'll do one. We'll do it like that. Okay. But as one more point of introduction, I just want to say, as a general rule, I hate this. This is the same thing that PlayStation All-Stars did when they got Robo-Raiden and Creepy Dante instead of other classic characters that people were wanting.
Yeah.
And it'd feel especially egregious since they weren't baked into the base game, but we prepaid a premium price for a bunch of brand deals and advertisements. And, like, you know, they'll be fun and whatever anyway, but, like, that's not what I wanted to buy. I didn't want to buy a bunch of brand deals for Nintendo and whoever to make a bunch of money off of my ignorance, because I'm an excited Smash fan. And Smash is, you know, kind of a bunch of cross promotion and advertising anyway, but it's always felt more like a celebration than a straight up ad. And I don't think that the strategy would be for sure bad, but it makes me skeptical.
Yeah, I unfortunately think that's what it's going to be.
Yeah.
If there is only one fighter pass, I think it's all going to be, like, third-party characters, which is disappointing because I feel like there's so many relevant, important Nintendo characters that are still not part of Smash. I look at Dixie Kong. I even look at Kamek, like, in Yoshi's Crafted World, actually plays, like, a bigger role than Kamek normally does. There's plenty of characters, and even if you don't think those are deserving, there's still plenty of characters from just in Nintendo's backyard you could add. But yeah, I think it will set the tone. I think that's why they had you purchase the Fighter Pass before you even knew what characters were in, which I'm kind of upset I purchased it, because honestly, I have no interest in Persona. I have no interest in JRPGs in general. Yeah. I would not have otherwise bought that character if I had the choice to, and I know a lot of people wouldn't either, so I'm kind of upset that that's what it's going to be. And then it sounds like, based on a leak, that the next character will be, like, Dragon Quest. Well, that's what the rumor's been for a while, which, Dragon Quest possible. Seems cool, but, like, look, I'm tired of JRPG sword characters, which I know Dragon Quest isn't exactly that, but it's close enough. Well, actually, yeah. It is an RPG, isn't it?
It is. Oh, but it's Dragon Quest was, like, the original.
Yeah,
that was,
but
like,
I do appreciate the art style of Dragon Quest, and I think it looks cool, but my point is that I think there's just too many characters of a certain origin that are in Smash, and it seems like that's what the Fighter Pass is going to serve as. I also don't think Smash normally tries to appeal to, like, the Western markets. I think they're usually only worried about how the Japanese region is going to view it. And so that's why I don't have a lot of faith in either that, like, you know, there's new games like Crash Team Racing coming out, which is also coming out on the Switch. I started thinking, well, if this is an advertisement, maybe we'll see Crash because of that, you know? But I don't have any faith in that for that very reason, because that's more of a American, especially European thing,
yeah.
But not really a Japanese thing.
Out of the gigantic Smash roster, there's only three characters who were created by any Western studios.
Mm. And two of them appeared in this game.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
Diddy Kong until Ultimate. Now it's King K. Rool and Dark Samus as well.
Yep. pretty crazy. Pretty crazy. So the first one that I had is that I think we're going to get someone from Tecmo Koei. Whether that's the guy from Ninja Gaiden.
Oh, sorry. I didn't understand you were asking.
Dynasty Warriors. Oh, no.
I thought you were asking like, if we thought that was going to have.
The general comments are welcome. So Tecmo Koei, I think we're going to get someone from Ninja Gaiden or Dynasty Warriors, along with the Switch port of the latest game in those series are. Nintendo.
I wish you listeners could see Trevor's face right now. Like, it's just grumpy.
So these picks that I made aren't anything that I want except for the third one, but it's what I think are going to happen. I mean, what's been the trend with every third party in the game? They're all Japanese, except for Shovel Knight, my boy Shovel Knight. Who, you know,
he's an assist trophy,
graduate him to character. I'll pay $20 just for Shovel Knight. Give me
yeah, I think if they did any assist trophy that way, it'd be Waluigi just because of fan outcry, which is unfortunate because I'm going to go ahead and say it. Waluigi doesn't deserve to be a character, okay?
He doesn't. Sorry. And I love Luigi, but Waluigi,
can I just want to say just really quick, and this will be over in about 10 seconds, but this is the easiest way. Like, I think people should look at this is that Waluigi is technically a Mario character, right? But he's Wario's partner in crime. Wario is considered its own thing at Smash. So what logo is Waluigi going to sport? Is it going to be the mushroom logo or the W logo? But that's the thing. If it's the W logo, it doesn't make sense because he doesn't appear in Wario. And if it's the mushroom, you know, it looks weird because Wario doesn't have it, but Waluigi does. I think that alone already makes it very strange. But anyways, yes.
They can make Waluigi a weird Luigi Echo.
Yeah. I actually don't have any ideas on what third parties will be added,
Let me finish this Tecmo Koei point. Now, I think this is going to happen definitely because Nintendo has done a ton of projects with these guys. So they've done Warrior spinoffs with Hyrule in Fire Emblem. They've done Pokemon Conquest with them, which was a crossover between Nobunaga's Ambition in Pokemon. And then Metroid Other M, Team Ninja did that. Team Ninja's connected with Tecmo Koei. Just to name a few.
Oh, they can put Roidly in.
I think he's an echo of Donkey Kong.
Oh,
imagine Donkey Kong's moveset on Roidly.
The claps.
I definitely think we're getting something like that. But you didn't have any written down?
No, because I don't actually know what games are.
You know what Japanese games are out there?
No, right?
Trevor, what did you write down?
What I wrote, I'm corny. Listen, I'm gonna take it there, dude. If we're gonna assume, let's just play with the idea that this is gonna set the tone for the rest of them, that they're like, they're going to add characters based on, like, third-party people they're trying to, like, produce games on the Nintendo Switch with. I said Sora from Kingdom Hearts, man. I wouldn't put it past him.
Oh, Only because of Disney. If it was, like, strictly Square Enix, I could see it happening. But you got to understand something, man. So something really interesting about Ultimate, Square Enix is very particular about what content can be added. You know, even in Ultimate, Final Fantasy has a whopping, you know, cloud. So they have the one stage, a whopping two songs, and a whopping two spirits. Cloud Normal and Cloud from Advent Children. Literally the only franchise in that game that doesn't have any other spirits besides the actual character that's playable. They are very particular about what they give out. Well, they say it's because, like, they agreed to, you know, use Cloud and whatnot with Smash, but, like, don't want to do much else. So I can't. That's one reason I can't see it happening. But then on top of that, then you factor in Disney with Sora. That's there's no way. I don't think.
Maybe that's a nail in Dragon Quest's coffin. I didn't know that about the Cloud Spirits. That's very fascinating.
Yeah, it's. I'm telling you, if you go there, literally, it's Cloud and then Cloud from Advent Children. And then the songs, it's literally two songs. It's that you know, whatever the attack theme,
yeah,
whatever. But that's They don't have anything.
I just think it would be, especially because you know people have been saying, why isn't there Kingdom Hearts 3 on the Switch? I mean, I think it'll be a perfect rollout.
And they'll continue asking years to come.
Kingdom Hearts 3 on Switch, and then also Sora. You tell me Sora won't get people buying that DLC.
It will.
Disney does have partial ownership of Sora the character, right?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I
think there's something like Disney owns like part of the rights for that game because it uses their. I can't see that one happening, man.
I don't know.
I think from a fan demand perspective, it seems logical, but from a business perspective, it doesn't at all.
Yeah, I just feel like if they add one more anime sword character, we have to change the name to Anime Sword Bros.
You put it past Super Smash Brothers?
No, not for a second. That's why my second pick is from Level 5 Professor Layton. Nintendo has published some of these games in this franchise, so there's definitely a relationship there. And there's a Japan-only release of the latest game in last August on Switch, so maybe we get an international release of that game, Layton's Mystery Journey, or some upcoming title that's also going to come to Switch. They've had just a long relationship, so I could see something happening there. And there's not too many Japanese studios left that haven't been represented here. Maybe like Spike Chunsoft, who they've also worked with. I mean, Nintendo has all these different relationships, and so I feel like we're going to see it from the Japan boys. Do you have anybody else written down?
I'll throw one in, too, but you can go if you have it on your head.
I have the craziest. I just took shots. It would be interesting. What if they brought Resident Evil 2 to the Nintendo Switch?
They're bringing a bunch of Resident Evil games
to
the Switch.
Why not?
Resident Evil 7 was on the Switch in Japan.
You know what I'm saying? Resident Evil 4, so what if they brought Leon from Resident Evil 2?
I could kind of see that. I think there's a case to be made there, honestly. And I mean, they've done so much with Capcom.
I would be so down with that.
The only like worry with him is like, how do you represent him without being very mature? And so, I don't know.
Snake in the game. Hey, listen, you can work
They do. They do, but Snake... I don't know. Snake doesn't have Metal Gear doesn't have zombies in it.
Plus, like Kojima was a really good friend of Sakurai's, and he asked Sakurai if he could put Snake in Melee, and that's what ended up like happening with Brawl. So I think that was more like a favor being done than like, you know.
Hey.
But I'll say, you know, one that would make total sense to me, but I don't have faith in it because I feel like Sakurai and that whole team doesn't really care about the DK franchise, but. You know, I started thinking Funky Kong would have made sense for DLC, and I'll tell you why. Like, because of Tropical Freeze and the fact that it did well on the Switch, there was actually a poll Nintendo put out, and they said, who were you most happy to see the revival from? And out of the four choices they gave, like, King K. Rool and Funky Kong were two of them. Now, King K. Rool won by, like, a landslide, but Funky Kong was number two. And there's been so much interest around that character, and I, you know, obviously came out after the project plan, but just seeing that Nintendo actually had it on its mind that, like, people were actually happy that Funky Kong was a playable character in Tropical Freeze and literally named him and three other characters out of, like, how many they had make an appearance in a game this year, I thought that was pretty cool, and I thought, I don't know, maybe Nintendo told him, like, hey, put in Funky Kong. I have more faith in a DK character being DLC because... You know, Sakurai's the one who seems to not care about Donkey Kong, so maybe Nintendo does, though.
Yeah, and that's why my last pick is someone who, the only Western character I think has any shot, and that would be Banjo.
Oh, man.
Banjo-Kazooie. I think he's actually got a shot. Yeah. Hear me out here.
I think he does have a shot,
I think
too.
He could come along with a Rare Replay port as part of what, or as part of whatever Xbox Live thing they're doing, so we could have versions of the original two games playable on Switch hardware through the Xbox Live or Games Pass or whatever. And I don't think any other Western company would break through, but seeing maybe Ubisoft or Bethesda, but in a game sporting only, like we said, three Western characters, I'm not going to hold my breath for anybody else. I just think that there's so much going on with Microsoft right now, even with the Cuphead release that, you know, Microsoft didn't own the rights to Cuphead, I'm pretty sure, but they were like totally fine with it. And, you know, it was a, there was a good relationship between the Cuphead developers and Microsoft, and Microsoft was totally cool with them publishing the game on Switch. And so, yeah, I think, and they even mentioned them in the direct where they were talking about Cuphead. So there's, there's just been such a good relationship there that I could see Banjo making his way to Smash Ultimate. And but I don't know. At the same time, Sakurai said that he prefers to work with Japanese developers because you skip time barriers and language barriers and all of that stuff.
I just rolled my eyes.
And yeah, so, that upsets me.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like they could do it. They could find a way to do it.
You know, his net worth is like $10 million. Like, I mean,
no,
I looked way that up go, the Sakurai. Other day. I mean, like, he makes a ton of money doing this, and that's why I'm like. The excuse of, like, cultural preference or, like, not wanting to have to deal with the hassle. Okay, listen, Nintendo always hires translators. Like, get the deal done.
Yeah,
okay?
Just do it.
You know what people want. Like, and
Smash Bros. Is too important to keep it to really only cater to a Japanese audience. Especially when I'm not absolutely sure, but I would bet large sums of money that the U.S. is the biggest market for the game.
Well, especially when those characters are still popular in Japan. King K. Rool... Actually, they were talking about may have been even more popular in Japan at the time of the ballot than the U.S. So, food for thought. But yeah.
So, I hope this doesn't happen, but it's the direction that I think Nintendo's going to go in. Mm. You know, you look at the DLC from the last game, it was Bayonetta as part of the acquisition. The ballot, the Smash ballot, people voted for Bayonetta. It wasn't at all anything to do with Nintendo buying the rights to those games and publishing them on Nintendo hardware.
Especially when she started development before the ballot even ended.
Nothing to do with that. She was the most popular overall for sure. and, you know, they added Ryu, they added Cloud. I think that this is what we're going to get.
Yeah.
The only original Nintendo character that hadn't been in Smash before that we got as part of Smash 4 was Corrin, and that is sad. So our precedent is basically recycled characters. There's no one left to recycle. Third parties or another Fire Emblem character.
Oh my goodness!
And I swear one of those slots is gonna be
if we get one more Fire
Edelgard or whatever her name is in Three Houses. I could see them adding all three of them.
That's horrible.
I grab my sword. I will defend my friends! And man, this is coming from a big Fire Emblem fan, but it's getting ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's like, gotten ridiculous.
Past ridiculous, my guy.
You know what else has gotten ridiculous? The length of this podcast.
Yeah, I think as this... we're right over an hour. We're right on time.
Right.
So that's going to be the end of this podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you want to comment on the show or whatever, go to thebentoblock.com/we the people. Write us a little blurb or a comment and, you know, chime in. What characters do you think are getting in Smash? Do you think that they're going to go in this direction or do you not think they're going to? Love to hear what you think.
Feed us some optimism.
Please.
Write us in, Tim. Wherever you are, Tim.
Yeah, Timmy.
Also, if I could beg you to do something real quick. Review the podcast on iTunes if you like it. If you don't like it, then don't. But if you do like it and you will give it 5 stars, review it on iTunes.
If you don't like it, you know, keep that negativity to yourself.
Discover the podcast. And so with that, thank you so much for listening. My name is Michael Cottrell.
Matthew.
And your boy Chubba.
This has been We the People. We're out.
Peace.